Hey! Is that the homegrown? Is that the homegrown podcast? What's up?
He's John Schaub, Pete Randall. Not much that these two can't handle. Your broadcast, you ramble. This homegrown, our preamble.
Listen closely, and you gon' see fun of you with the Great Lakes Swing.
Ain't a thing, boy, this the 18, boy. You gon' see what I mean, boy. Come on with the theme, boy.
Everybody on your tablet or your phone. Subscribe to the podcast, it's homegrown. Subscribe to the podcast, it's homegrown. The name of the podcast is homegrown. It's what everybody on your tablet or your phone. Subscribe to the podcast, it's homegrown. Subscribe to the podcast, it's homegrown. The name of the podcast is homegrown.
Hey everyone, thanks for coming back to the Homegrown Podcast. If you are a new listener, thank you for checking us out. If you are returning, thank you for returning. We really appreciate the listen and hope everyone enjoys. I've been getting some cool feedback, so that's kind of been fun from friends, family. It's been interesting. Today we have a special guest, but before I get to that, I'd like to do the media, social media. That is, you can follow us at The Homegrown Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcast. Hopefully you guys listen because podcasts are awesome. To get to our guest, it is a very, very, very close friend of the show. Both Randy and I have known this guy for... And you know what's funny? The last couple of guests I've all known for almost a decade, and it's fucking trippy, dude. We went to school with this motherfucker. We will get into how we met in shortly. But David Reiling, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh man, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. So Dave and I met Madison Media Institute, rest in peace. I always like to say that now, sadly. But we met in school. You started the game program, right? When I started their audio program, is that right?
Yeah. I started in 2010, finished that 2012, and turned around and went back in for film and finished that in 2014.
Yeah. And so I don't even know. This is another thing about the podcast, Dave, that I love is like it's just trying to jog our fucking memory. I don't necessarily know how we met. It might have just been like out at smoke break time between classes.
It was at smoke break time. I mean, between classes, you know, standing out front, and you were in the audio department, and that was an area that I wasn't very familiar in. And I really tried to integrate everybody on different projects.
Yeah. When I met you, like, that's what I noticed first was like, you were someone that really took the idea of like, you can't be good at every aspect of like building a video game, for example. Right. And so you're going to need to branch out and to collaborate with different people. Whereas like, at the school, and anyone that went to MMI knows this, like, music people are the snobs. Like, we're the popular kids. If, like, out of, like, the misfits, the island of misfits that we all were, like, we're, like, those cliquey cheerleaders because we think we just know everything about music and blah, blah, blah. And so, like, I always felt there was, like, this weird resistance among, like, the design group and the video group for a little bit. But because like video and audio are so tied together, like we were kind of forced to do it. But like,
well, you guys had classes together too,
right? Yeah. We had some overlapping classes.
With audio kids.
But I always we'll just get the skeletons out of the closet. I always thought the game kids were like not feeling us. Like we would walk past them and just be like, God damn, they just like, you know. But like,
I mean, if you think about it, like, I don't like to generalize or anything like that, but. A lot of gamers, a lot of game designers were computer guys, you know, computer kids, computer girls, and we'll sit there. We maybe not have the best social skills, in person,
right?
But have amazing social skills on a computer,
right? You know,
There's a little like barrier there, and right. It's a lot easier. Sometimes it's a lot easier to type your words than to speak them.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I've never, like, had I, like, ran into one of you guys, like, on Second Life, you know, or whatever, like, one of those media animation things, maybe it would have been different. But that is a good perspective, too, because I think as music people, it is a very social thing and aspect and entity. So, like, we were always just, like, laughing or crying or fighting, or, you know, we're just very vocal with one another. Whereas, yeah, that makes sense. And like, and again, like, we just don't have time to break everyone down, so we'll generalize a little bit here. But like, the idea of a gamer is that, right? Like, you guys are super technical and you have so much, not that music does, but it's more of an art form than a technicality, if that makes sense. Like, you guys have to be on it, right? Like, whereas, yeah, like,
I mean, you really have to, you know, I mean, especially in like the multiplayer gaming aspect, the PC gaming aspect,
right?
You know, being up to speed with all things tech. Then you start thinking about, like, for me personally, it was the massive multiplayer games, you know, your World of Warcraft, and all that back in the day. There's a lot of socializing via text. And I mean, later on, it did, you know, especially with, like, you know, voice over internet, Discord, and other programs back in the day. But, you know, there was less physical in-person interaction, but there was a whole lot of digital interaction. So we're just as social, but in a very different sense of the word. You know, we socialize on a massive scale as opposed to an interpersonal scale. So when you're in a social environment like a college or whatever, and those are, and you're put to the test with that, you know, and all of a sudden now those barriers are gone.
Right.
And it's hard. It's harder for some people to interact like that. Whereas, you know, I've always been more of a social butterfly. I was really into the music scene growing up, and, you know, making new friends wasn't, you know, like, especially in person or even online.
Yeah.
Was always kind of just part of the thing, you know, it was a part of who I was. I love being around my homies.
Yeah, no. And I think it's funny because, like, the closest friends of mine from all that time there, like, majority obviously come from, like, the recording program and audio program. But the next runner-up is actually game. Like, I have a few video friends that, like, but, like, two, I would say, like, no, I would say, no, a handful. Like, a good handful of, like, maybe 5 to 10 from the video overall department of just students that came through there. But, like, there's like Nate, Clark, Ben, you, right? Like, those are, like, just really, really, really close friends that I just, like, because I didn't go to school at some of the same time as the video people that I know. They were little, I think I was already in my bachelor's program at that time. But, like, I started with you and I was, like, right after Nate. And so, like, I was on, like, that, those coattails of, like, who you guys were. And so, like, there was a little bit of life that came through that gaming department after that too, I feel like, because of just, like, breaking the mold a little bit, right? Like, Nate Clark is someone that, like, maybe even from afar doesn't even look like he's into games, right? Like, I remember the first time I met him, I was like, oh, you're from the gaming department? Like, shit. Like, I just, because of the generalizing, because of the stereotypical, like, what people image gamers to be, it was like, it was a good, like, I think it was a good thing, right? I think that it showed different
when people. I first started there, I remember Nate Clark. He was actually a TA at my mocap class, and Bobby D's mocap class. And at first, I was kind of intimidated by him just by how much he knew.
Yeah, no, you know? Yeah. If anyone knows Nate, and Nate, if you're listening, like, you know this about yourself, bro. Like, he is a very, like, he knows his shit.
Yeah. He knows the shit.
Yeah. And doesn't mind to fly. He's like the game. I just thought of this and I think you'll love this. He is the Ken Pearsall of your guys' department. I think I just that like just because they are, dude, I'm having such like a moment right now. And this is gonna be very niche to who, like, the people that are listening to this. So like, bear with us. But he is totally that guy in that sense of, like, Ken is very much like that too. Cause it's like, God damn, you have a giant brain and just can do it. Like, and all aspects, right? Like, all aspects.
Well, I mean, I looked up to that, you know, cause I mean, I was older when I came back to school, you know, I graduated high school in, I mean, 93, aging myself here.
Oh yeah. We're going to get to that.
But I didn't go to college until 2010. Mm. I had almost two decades away from that entire environment. So when I first started, it was terrifying to be honest.
Let's dive into that. Let's dive into that. So what made you after that time, right? So you said you graduated high school in 93 and you decided 2010, like what was that initial, how would that come from, you know? Cause that's a lot of time off, bro. You know what I mean?
I moved around a lot. I was looking for an identity basically. Mm. And it took me a long time to realize that I, was in a series of failed relationships and chased one person after another around the country because, you know, in my eyes, that's what you do after high school. You find your significant other, you get married, and you grow up and you have a family and you wait to die. Right. And I wasn't interested in that.
Yeah.
I liked having that other person. And kind of gravitated in towards that default setting, but it never worked. It was always like 2 years of going around the country, one side to the other, Florida to Virginia to Dallas to Wisconsin, multiple times. Right. And, you know, after a while, failed relationships, heartbreaks, setbacks, and starting over and over and over. I kept winding up at the same place, and I was going through a really bad depression. Mm. I felt I was kind of almost at the end of my rope.
Yeah.
And a commercial came on TV. I was out of I was coming out of a pretty dark place, and I saw this commercial, and it was for a digital art and visual effects school in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying Dave's school. And I, you know, it was either that or, you know, I was considering some pretty dark things at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, if this is it, this is it. And then I saw the commercial and it just kept saying it over and over, Dave's school. And it just kind of hit me like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I should go to school. Maybe I should try to remember who I was before life got ugly.
Yeah.
And I called them and I took a tour down to Orlando and I checked out their school. And I also started looking around elsewhere, Full Sail. I started, you know, trying to think of who I was, and the things that I was passionate about most were video games and music. Yeah. And I never learned how to play music, but I could play the hell out of some video games.
Right.
And Madison has always been, growing up, you know, I was born in Rockford, so Madison was always there. And I always went up to Wisconsin to visit family and friends and all that. So it was always in the back of my head. And I looked and saw what schools were there, and I found MMI.
Yeah.
And I looked at and saw who was teaching there. And I saw Bobby D have been, he did mocap, and he made the mocap lab at Raven, and, you know, Raven with their Call of Duty franchise. And back then, for me, it was X-Men Legends. Yeah. I was all about that game.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was an animator on that. I figured that who better to teach me animation than the person that was in one of my favorite games. So that's where I decided. Yeah. You know, and I moved to Wisconsin about 8 months later was when I started at MMI. I was 34 years old.
Dang, dude, that's crazy. Like, I think we've talked about, like, how we've, like, just hanging out and stuff, always talked about our past and stuff. But, like, that timeline's crazy because, like, just, I don't know. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they're just talking about, like, paths of life, right? Like, and just, like, your road and, like, how things end up being how they are. And like, for you to do that in 93 when you graduated, like, I was one at the time, you know what I mean? So like, there was time, but like, if you look at it without that stumble from 93 to 2010 and to pushing you to a new thing, like, we would have never met. Like, and that's kind of trippy to me in the sense of like, I was going through that identity switch, and why I ended up after that, after graduating, like, I was wanting to make a different switch of the career path I was going down. And so like, it wasn't as drastic, but it's just like that path of like, it's so trippy just how things play out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for, you know, over 10 years, I was so used to being Dave and somebody.
Mm. You have to find out who you were, man. You know, I stand on your own two feet.
I never knew who Dave was.
Right.
You know, I actually later in life, I was diagnosed on the spectrum, and there was a lot of things in my head that finally made sense.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe it's not just me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not just, you know, I mean, there's, you know, life has a way of traumatizing us all.
Right.
And exacerbating issues.
Yeah.
And especially undiagnosed and untreated issues. Mm. And, you know, so having some of those questions answered later on was, you know, really key to like understanding like, okay, well, maybe I did make some bad decisions, but maybe I made some really good decisions for myself later.
Right.
And I'll tell you, success at 45 tastes just as sweet as it would have at 25.
Right. Yeah. And like, we can definitely compare that because like at the time of 25, like I had just, I think that's when I started working for MMI. So like I had my highest paying job and like decent, you know, income and like what people may qualify as success being just so young. It's like, yeah, it doesn't matter when it happens as long as like you get there and see the tunnel at the end of the light to move towards that and eventually get there at some point. But that's crazy, man. Cause like you're such a, individual of like why I always enjoy our conversation is because like we just go super deep, and I've always appreciated you looking at life and just different like deeper meanings and more maybe even more like zen like in ways, like, and I don't know if you'd quantify as that, but like, you know what I mean, like you've always been one of my friends that just goes a little bit deeper of just like what things could have been and what like. So like that whole saying of like, it's not better at 45 or 25 as long, you know, like not all of our friends are saying that type of shit, you know?
Yeah. And I'm, you know, and I don't know if that's, you know, age bringing wisdom or, just kind of me going into, my Dave-isms, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I definitely have a different perspective on things than I always have. You know, it was even in my days in high school, I had such a different perspective on things. And you know, like those years between graduating and going to college, you know, it was the whole that I think a lot of that perspective is what pushed me into the music community. Mm. Even though I wasn't a musician, you know, going to shows like constantly,
yeah,
and meeting the people and traveling around with people, especially, you know, getting into the scenes I did, the being very social and loud about it was such a thing. So when I went to school and I met you, I'm already extroverted.
Right.
I'm already used to meeting people from all over the country. And, right, you know, and I still know most of these people too. And which is great for now when I travel around for gigs, because now it's easy to find a couch to crash.
Right. For sure. No. And we always connected on like that idea of identity, right? Because I think you and I have talked about like my struggles of finding my identity just with my adoption and, you know, having a majority white family and just kind of finding my groove in that. And then just your identity as just who you were, but getting to that, like what is it for people that wonder how do you tell someone about your like trying to find yourself, right? Because I think maybe for younger listeners who are going through that right now don't understand it. And for me, it was always just like, you have to go and like you said, life has a way of just kind of being traumatizing in ways. And it's like, for me, it's like the way you react and the way you respond to certain scars is maybe a first step. How would you describe that to someone that's listening though? Just like identity, who that is, what does that mean? How do you get there and all that?
You know, when I was in my 20s, I earned a nickname, and when I was a kid, I always wanted a nickname. I didn't get one. And then in my 20s, I was given a nickname by a friend and he passed. But, that nickname became part of my identity. Hmm. And, I had the nickname was Boga. I have it tattooed on my belly. And when I would go out and I would see certain people, they didn't know my name. They didn't know my name was Dave or David. They called me Boga. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you know, younger kid, you know, kind of wild and crazy, partying a lot, drinking a lot. Cause I mean, in this part of Florida, there's that's really all there is to do. I mean, hell, the bars are open till 4 o'clock.
I mean, fuck, it's Florida. That's all you had to say. Everyone knows what's down there.
So, I mean, that's what we do, you know? We drink, we fuck, we fight. And there was a lot of that. And so when I would go out, I would have this expectation on who I had to be.
Mm.
You know, I had to live up to this character named Boga.
Hmm.
And as I, you know, as life has, you know, as I experienced different traumas, losing friends to suicide or drunk driving or whatever, parts of your identity get chipped away.
Yeah.
You know, you leave when you go through traumas. If for me, losing friends was a common thing. It was a commonality. You could set your watch to it. By November, one of your friends in November checked out.
Hmm.
You know, and this area of Florida, that was one of the only ways. That's one of the ways out of this place is suicide.
Yeah,
and I know way too many people from that are no longer with us because of that.
Yeah,
but and each one of them took a part of me with.
Yeah.
You know, and then going through that for so many years, there comes a time where you got to find out who you are for you. Even if it's not for anybody else, just for yourself, find out, you know, that, and that can become a whole other source of trauma on its own.
Right.
Losing touch with yourself, figuring out, finding yourself, you know, that's something, you know, you see in all of these coming of age films.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go find myself. I don't think that it's a realization that you wake up one day with a whole, I got to find myself thing. I think it's just life will tell you. It will definitely tell you. It's up. But if you don't hear it, then you're going to wind up repeating those same things.
Yeah. No, that's some good shit too, because I think like in my last, so when I was just like re-enrolled in therapy back during like when the pandemic started up until like moving back here. That was like one of the things that my therapist was talking about. It was just like riding the wave, similar to like just kind of playing it out and hearing the noise, like hearing life speak to you, right? Like you have to ride it out, but you need to know that you're riding it out. If that makes sense, right? Like you can't, it's one thing to just understand that that's how life is, but it's another thing to like truly accept that and try and pick up signs of like what needs to be next or what does this mean in the long haul type of shit. Right. And I think that's real shit, man, because I think like people that may not suffer or not suffer, but may not have to balance life with depression or anxiety or loss even, right? Like, cause like there's a lot of people that walk through this life that like until their grandparents die, they don't see anything. Right. And to like, when they're just like, well, just man, get up, get over it. It's like, well, no, like you have to let that person, like you said, because every loss does take a piece of you with to like refill that loss of identity with truly who you are. Right. And like, because friends can be crutches in ways of just like, oh, if I have my friends, I'm good. But then you're never figuring out like what you want to do, who you are type of shit, you know?
Well, that was me with, you know, girlfriends.
Right.
Yeah, that, you know, it was something to latch onto, and having codependency issues throughout my younger adult years, that, you know, remained unaddressed until my mid adult years, you know? But not knowing that, you know, not having the, you know, having a million excuses why I didn't go to therapy versus finally going and getting some questions answered, having some new questions posed,
right?
Finding new ways of coping, you know, that I didn't back then, you know, and I, you know, life would have been vastly different though. You know,
That's crazy. Just cause like, I think everyone, and to the people that do go through life with loss or, you know, all this type of shit, it's like, it seems impossible at times, but like if you understand yourself, and I think that comes back to that identity aspect, right? Like, you will know hopefully when to ask for help. And if you have a good support system around you, it doesn't make it easier by any means, but it makes it more manageable in the sense of like, while you're trying to find yourself and you go through this shit, like, that's what always saved me, right? Like, was my friends, like, up until like, so like when I first got that, and like, and then I think you talked about this, right? Like the idea of like when someone told you you might be on a spectrum or you might have this or that, there's clarity, right? I got really lucky in a sense of like, and why I call it the best and worst thing of my life of when my friend killed himself at, we were 12, 13, at such a vulnerable age, I understood right away, like life, right? And just that sense of what life can throw at you. But it gave me a prong to go down a path of very darkness, but at an age where I could recover, right? Like if you do have been to come out of that other side of that deep hole, like it gave me time to still understand, okay, I still can get through this shit, because until like I probably wasn't stable. I mean, shit, that happened in like fifth, sixth grade, seventh grade. I probably wasn't like truly confident back into my step until damn near my senior year of high school. And so like there was that time though that's so young still that I'm able to be like, okay, I got through that, like I'm good, let's continue to grow and let's do this. But it was because of my friends at the time that did that. And then it repeated itself when I found more friends at MMI and honestly like grew more connections of like, because there was a night where, I don't know if you know this story, but there was a night where was it Jessica or Michelle? It was Jessica. So my friend Jessica had passed away when I was camping with Emma, Alex, and I can't remember who else was. Were you with us?
It was me and
yeah,
Ben.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it was that time. Was yeah, man. Hey, we got... The reason why we went camping, folks, is not to just go to nature. We went to party. So there's a lot of things I forgot. But it was that time when I lost Jessica that, like...
Yeah.
I got a phone call from my friend Emily, and she told me, just because like I hadn't heard yet, and I think she found out that I hadn't heard, so she just wanted to let everyone that knew her, you know. But like it was such a loss, but immediately I had that new support system I took my scars and things happened, but like it was the ability to understand like, oh shit, okay. Like at least even though I may not fully know who I am yet, is like I still have that support system. So it's like find any type of support system, right? Like I think is an advice to people that may be going through.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, one thing that didn't hit me until much later too, when we were hanging out, was how you really do become your friends. You really do become who you associate with. Everybody has a way of leaving their personality impression on yourself. You know, whether you pick up a quirk or a habit from somebody, learn a different perspective from somebody, no matter what it is, everybody leaves their impression on you. And if you have your core group of friends that you're around all the time, you'll start noticing that, like that quirk that one of your friends does, you've picked up on. So, in almost a physical way, as well as like a personal and emotional and personality way, you really do absorb and become your crew, who you associate with.
Right.
So especially at that time, and I remember that, I remember most of that weekend, you know, that's I really started looking and seeing who my friends really were. And it let me know, it showed me that, you know, I mean, I was definitely on the right path that I really wanted to be on. Because, you know, like even with losses, when you lose a friend, when you lose a significant other and a part of you goes with them and it happens over and over. But then you also have that network around you and your circle around you that is filling that back up. Right. So there's this balance in life where, and it's weird because like the more social you are, that's one of the double-edged swords of being like an extrovert too, is you have a lot of friends. You have a lot of acquaintances and a lot of associates, but that also means that there's a lot of loss.
Right, you a lot of vulnerability.
A lot of vulnerability. You know, so it's easy to get caught up in that and to lose yourself to that. that's, you know, finding you guys and working on the films we worked on helped me find who I was, who this new me was. You know, when I went to school, I wanted to become a better me. I wanted, you know, if I have to do this job, I wanted it to be something I'm interested in. I missed out on the college experience after high school, you know, and I had the life experience for a while. But then I, you know, and wanting to do something more than, you know, I was a chef for 12 years. I got really burned out, but I got to a point where that was all I knew was how to work a kitchen line.
Right.
And going to find a new job, it would just be at another restaurant. I was just tired. So I wanted to go to school to learn new skills, to do something different, to be a better, what I felt was a better me. But it wasn't necessarily the job afterwards or the skills that I learned. It was the network and the people that made it. You know, that's what. And then I noticed this like really shift in who I was and who I was becoming and where I was and who I used to be was, you know, when I looked around and I saw like you and Alex and Ben and Champ and Steve and all of these, you know, Nate and all these awesome people that are, you know, you could just tell these people are going to do something.
Right.
And then going from that to having, you know, directors and producers as friends, like, who even are you guys? Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, it's like just blown me away. And, you know, I'm glad. Sometimes I say, I wish I would have done this earlier in life, but it wouldn't have been the same. I wouldn't have taken it seriously.
And I think too, like on that note, for me at least, and sorry to interrupt you, but like, I wouldn't have wanted you to do it younger because like, as someone that came into the program so young, like being so young and then just like fresh out of high school, that's what made me. Because, like, what people don't understand is, like, MMI was for people that necessarily may have not gone. Like, at the time, they were not marketing high school students, right? They were marketing people that went into the career force, maybe are looking for a change, let's come back, do this, boom, new career. And so for me, coming literally only, it's like 6 months after I graduated, I learned so quickly because everyone else's life experiences were not rubbing off because you have to go through your own experiences, but made me aware of things to look for, things to try to not avoid, but just be aware of that might happen. Right.
Well, and, I mean, you're still going to hear those stories from, you know, the older people of things to avoid.
Right.
You know, hey, don't do meth.
Right. Yeah.
Don't do heroin.
Yeah.
You're going to hear things like that from people that have lived life and have lost friends that did those things.
You know?
So, but then again, it was great for me too, because the younger generation kept me in touch with my own youth, kept me in touch with what's current, kept me in touch with how am I going to stay relevant when I'm you know, at the time I was 35. So how am I going to stay relevant when I'm 45? Here I am 46. And I hope, you know, I hope I'm becoming relevant.
No, yeah. And like for me too, like it was the idea that I was able to, I had it and then I lost it. I hate when this happens.
Having older friends, having that perspective.
Yeah. It allowed me to, thank you. So the greatest thing that happened for me around like the closest people I met through there. So like you, Nate, Jacob, Ben, Randy, like those, like that main crew, Emma, Ash, all those, Natalie, all those cast of characters that like I super like truly close, like those are like very close to my heart relationships. Even if I don't see them, like we pick it up right where we left off. Yeah. Adam included into that, like all those cats, right? You all allowed everyone that came into that circle or friendship to also not just be driven by like, well, fuck, I'm 45, so I know better than you. It was the idea that everyone had their own baggage, right? And we understood that that meant either life experience or just a different perspective of things that happened through each other's lives. Like, Audrey's in that too, like, right? I'm trying not to leave people off, but we're going to.
I love
but,
all of these people. I can see their faces right now.
But like all of us, no matter the age or where we were at, everyone allowed us to sit at the table and be like, well, fuck, I had this in my past, I had that in my past, and that played true value of the understanding, like, well, let's just all learn from this, right? Because, like, not everyone knows what it's like to be racially profiled. I don't know what it's like to be gay. I don't know, you know what I mean? So, like, there's these things that even throughout school we learned about. But, yeah, that's what I wanted to, like, put on note, is, like, the older crew of those people of age and our friendship groups allowed the younger people to feel validated, I guess is a quicker way to say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, and looking back at it now, you know, I mean, we had such a diverse cast of people.
Really, you know? Right. And it kept growing. Shit. Like when Jordan, like I remember when I enrolled Jordan and I got him scheduled to come on here. And so we'll chop that up when we do that. But like we kept, and maybe we didn't work on everything together necessarily, but we had this bond of like when we're walking through the halls, we're going to stop and chat for a quick second, right? Like it wasn't as like isolating as maybe a lot of other people made MMI, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, with as diverse of a cast as we've had, and across all spectrums, you know, age spectrum, gender spectrum, sexuality spectrum, interest spectrum. I mean, and we still, I mean, we're all still really close with each other.
Right.
All these years later, it's almost like if you put us all in the same room, you're going
to. Oh, it's a party up in there. Shit. If you put all,
but it's like love and like respect and just, I couldn't even imagine how much fun we would have. If we, you know, if we have a little reunion after 10 years, it's been, maybe somebody should put a reunion together there, John.
Right? No, that would be
somebody with a voice that people listen to.
No, that would be sick. Cause like, yeah, no, I remember, and that's why I love doing the podcast, man, is because like I get to do that in essence. Is like, but like the crazy thing is that no matter who I talk to, like Champ and I, right? We picked off like to the beat where we left off, like you and me, Corey, like we all, like that's the cool thing about groups, and I guess the bigger way of saying that long conversation is to like really find that groove that's positive on your life, right? But also supports you through whatever endeavor. Because man, I remember, dude, like, because making this career shift right now, I was talking to Katie about this shit. I was like, I don't know what my friends are gonna say. Like all my friends for the last damn near 10 years. Not glued us together because it was our friendships that did that, but like our main foundation of finding each other was media, was video, was music, was video games, was design, whatever it was. And I was like, oh my God, what if I just lose that? And everyone's like, oh, so you're switching into this? Like, boom, like, all right, we'll talk to you when we talk to you. But like, it showed me when I told people this, they're like, oh yeah, no, yeah. Not only does it make sense, but like I'm going to continue to support just like I did before. And like you're talking about the validation moments, right? Like that was one of them too. It was just like, oh shit, okay, we're good then. You know, this is bigger than what maybe we even know it is right now.
And I mean, you know, like I said earlier, if you think about it, all the losses in life those take a little chunk of you. All these gains in life bring big pieces too. You know. And
you got some bars today, man. I don't know what you did to pre-prep this, but damn, that's some good. That's a good point. It's a good point.
You know, but it's easy to overlook. It's easy to overlook the new things or the big things that are being added to your life because these holes in it feel so massive.
Facts.
You know, but if you just look at things objectively, take a step away from it all, take a step back from yourself and just look at it from another perspective to see the big picture of things. All these people are adding so much to your life. I mean, if you look at all those people that you named, I mean, I can see their faces and just know what they've brought to my life and hopefully what I've brought to theirs.
Right.
You know, and at some point, hopefully not for a long time when we have to deal with the losses of individuals, you know, hopefully we're adding as much or more than we're losing along the way. Facts. And I think that's one of the tricks. I think that's really one of the tricks, especially to, you know, just to be able to see a better tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, see, This is, see, people, this is why I talk to Dave, man, because we just go on these down, like, this is also why, like, all of my friends are really good at podcasting, is because, like, we just dive into this shit, people. So keep up, get your notebooks out. We're laying bars on you today. So I wanted to transition into, you found your identity, and part of that was kind of like this punk community that had been obviously around for decades before and still after here now. But I want to dive into that world, try and get perspectives. And so for people of like maybe mainstream life, they view punk as like a genre of music, right? Like, and yeah, punk pop maybe like also watered that down quite a bit too. But it is, for people that don't know, it is a very true, thriving lifestyle and community, and a population that around the country and even around the world, people have gravitated to because of this freedom lifestyle. But I want to just understand, like, how did you kind of get into this? What were things that were attractive to this, like, nuance of life?
Oh, I can remember the day. I remember the day it happened, the first time I saw somebody with a green mohawk. I was, you know, when I was in middle school, I started skateboarding. Really in the first big wave back in mid, late 80s.
Yeah, get your cane out, bro.
87, 88. I remember having my first Corey O'Brien Santa Cruz skateboard. And we were
to put this in around perspective, Randy was like 3 and you were already skateboarding. You're old as shit, bro. Yeah.
And you know what? I honestly have, you know, I'm 46 now, and I think I'm feeling old. But then I reminded myself that not all of our friends get to see 30 and 40.
Facts.
And I'm going to keep going for them.
Amen.
Yeah, no. And so I don't feel nearly as old knowing that I've lost friends that were 16.
True.
Knowing that I've lost friends that were 20 and 25 and 30, 35, and knowing that I outlived some friends that when they died, they were 33 years old. And, that's crazy. You know, so I wear it with honor now. I wear that old badge and I'll rock my cane with honor.
Hey, man, we needed that role filled. We need that wisdom Jedi, man. And like, look what glued in, bro.
Everybody needs an older friend.
You need the old Obi-Wan Kenobi. You can't get there. You know, the whole story is around that shit, man.
I mean, he started it off, man.
Preach. What was the most attracting thing towards the punk community? Once you kind of like saw your first mohawk, saw maybe and because you became aware, right? You see that one, you all of a sudden see more.
Yeah, well, I saw that, and you know, I started going to shows. There was when I lived in Rockford, there was a skate park there called Rotation Station, and so I started going to some punk shows there and saw some great bands. But I saw this, the closeness of these kids that were all together, and then I started, you know, I kind of got accepted by a bunch of them and started hanging out with them a lot. I started skating with them a lot, and they kind of became a family. And, you know, I didn't have a very traditional family. I grew up in a very abusive home, very hostile and abusive alcoholic stepfather that put my mom in a coma and would beat me and stuff, you know, so I was gone a lot. I stayed out on the streets as much as possible so I didn't have to go home to them.
Right.
And so they kind of became this surrogate family. And then, you know, after I graduated school and started traveling some, you know, I had piercings and tattoos and weird hair and all that, and a spiky coat and all that. So I was easily identifiable as one of them. And they were easily identifiable to me as one of mine.
Right.
And no matter where I was, Birmingham, Louisville, you know, Virginia Beach, Cleveland, Dallas.
That's crazy, because like all those places you never think would have like a thriving or just like punk
community. It just takes seeing one. And one punk sees another punk. It's like, oh, hey, brother. And you don't even know each other's names yet.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you just know that you're in a safe place now. You're with one of yours, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not a race thing, it's not an age thing, it's not a class thing. It's some kid in a weird spiky coat, and you got a weird spiky coat, and people walking by are looking at you both the exact same.
See, and you have a brother, you have a sister. And I think we've talked about this when we first met too, is that that is why I feel, because I know not a lot, but like maybe 2 to 3, you being one of them, that come, that label themselves within punk, you know, life and mm-hmm. just what they want to be. But that's very similar to what people of color go through, right? Like I automatically, yeah. and people always hate me for saying this because like I come from a white community, my whole family is white, but it's true in the fact of like when I meet someone of color for the first time, like I am way more relaxed usually than I am if I'm meeting a white person for the first time. And it's the factor of like what you were saying, like it's just that of what your experiences go through, like the whole spiky coat you're walking down in the mall, people are gawking at you. It's like not everyone knows what that feels like when it's of color or of sexual yep. orientation or whatever that it is. And so like there's a very common ground maybe between punk people. Maybe why you even see a lot of people of color within the punk community, right? Because oh, yeah. I think like oh, yeah. that's I mean, a whole thing, right? Like
for as closed of a scene as we seem to be, we also have the most diverse, one of the most diverse cultures that I've been a part of. Because it doesn't matter where you're from, what your skin looks like, how many colors your skin are.
Right.
You know, how many holes you have in your face, how rich or poor you or your parents are, you know, it's about your character. It's about who you are. You know, right. I mean, are you a decent person or are you a shithead? Right. And even if you're a shithead, how much of a shithead are you? Are right. you so much of a shithead that you're irredeemable? Or are you just enough of a shithead to where we might have a really, really good or messed up time on Tuesday nights?
Right.
You know, right. We all make mistakes. How far are we willing to go for that redemption for a second chance? You know, and a lot of times the punk community, especially like on the streets, the street kids and stuff, a lot of times they don't have second chances.
Mm.
You know, and that's where they find themselves, and it's a hard life. I wouldn't, you know, it's, but I mean, just within any culture, there's so many different subcultures and spectrums on it. You know, right. I mean, there's a million types of punks. There's a million, you know, there's a million types of everything. Really, I mean, it's such yeah. And that's the thing about life too. Is like once you stop seeing everything in ones and zeros and you see all of the other numbers in between.
Right.
You know, yeah. And that's the thing about the whole punk thing. You know, it started off as a surrogate family. And then as I got a little bit older and more into it, it became this whole like chaos just for the sake of it thing. Mm. And then as I got even older and, you know, didn't die at 27, it became this more community-based thing. And you start seeing organizations like Anti-Racist Action and Food Not Bombs,
Yeah, that was like, and to like very surprising to fast forward into like more of today's current events is like when Randy and I were out there, like I did see like way more punk scene, maybe stereotypical people than I ever thought would ever be at a Black Lives Matter protest or at the protesting I went to in Chicago here. Like there were like, that's very true that like they have been committed to support things outside of just punk lifestyle yeah. and nonsense for nonsense. When the time comes, community is a community.
And, you know, very, very activist too. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of activism in the punk rock scene. There's yeah. a lot of, community service and assistance and communal living and, you know, harm reduction. Mm. We had a service in New Orleans when I was living there, a safety network of punks. Mm. If you were walking home and didn't feel safe, 3 or 4 scary looking punk rocker people were going to show up, you know, and
that's crazy.
Home.
That's amazing.
Right now, there's this great organization called Punk Rock Saves Lives. They help with addiction and recovery across the nation. You know, they're here in Pensacola, a friend of mine runs a chapter of Food Not Bombs, where, you know, we or they put on shows, and instead of, you know, they take food donations for cover charge and they distribute it to the homeless. You know, so I mean, there's, you know, the, and now getting older and being middle aged and still involved in the punk scene for, you know, 30 years, things like that are a lot more appealing to me. And because, you know, I mean, it's a necessary facet that our whole communities need. But then, you know, during the protests and all of that, so many, and it broke my heart not to be out there with everybody. But seeing it, so that's, you know, but there's a million ways to be activist.
Yeah,
there's a
exactly.
million ways yep. to use your voice. In a digital age, there's no reason why we can't raise a little bit of hell digitally.
Right. No, yeah, because I tell people that when I go to these like random events when I can, or like I'm use this platform or whatever, and they're like, well, like isn't enough just to, it's like it's enough to do whatever. Like even if you post one thing that, because as arbitrary and fake as social media is and the nuance of it, if someone can go onto your profile and understand what you just stand for, that can be a lot. Like that can shift narratives of like, oh shit, you know, so-and-so thinks this way. Maybe that's their way into looking at different things in different perspectives, right? Because they know a friend that maybe they thought leaned one way, but leaned this way instead, right? I think so even that, as again, it's arbitrary. It doesn't move the needle at all. It sparks conversation, which this whole podcast and this thought of conversation I'm so addicted to is like, that's what starts to heal this shit. Is like, even if it's yelling at someone, as much as it's not healthy and people are defensive and they don't get much across, it can show where you stand or where your line is. And I think sometimes that's healthy in ways because you know how to have conversations with them moving forward, maybe, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I have people from both sides of the aisle. You know, my networks and stuff. And I work with people on both sides of the aisle. While I was in Milwaukee recently, working a gig up there, I even got called for somebody, from somebody that wanted me to run cameras at the Trump rally in Georgia. I was already booked that weekend, so I wasn't able to, but I mean, you know, and working both sides of the aisle, working events on both sides of the aisle and hearing those perspectives. I mean, Is that going to change my mind? Probably not. I'm pretty rooted in my beliefs at this point in my life. But is it going to at least open me up to a conversation to where I can understand somebody else that has different views?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And that's the bigger thing.
I would rather open up a dialogue with somebody that thinks completely opposite of me just so I can understand why.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Because I think once you can do that, you may not change the way you live your life, the way you vote, the way you do whatever, but again, you're having conversation of mutual understanding that it's both valid, right? That your opinion is valid, my opinion is valid, because that's what fixes this shit. It's just when you get stuck in like the fuck you mentality on both sides, right? No matter who you are, it's like you have to have that, let me at least listen. And as fucked up as I think it may be, and like we're all working on this, right? Like we're not sitting here saying we're masters at this, but like that's the opinion that I think is just like seeing those differences. Because like let's get into this. Like I see the value of people that don't want to wear masks, don't want vaccinations, may have voted for Trump. And I think like I was talking to Katie about this yesterday when we were driving home from Wisconsin. There is a true thing I'm interested in when it comes to those like-minded people of like, I get where you're coming from and why it's so frustrating, because as someone of color, we're always told, well, you're invalidated, just do this, blah, blah, blah. And like certain narratives have been shifting towards those conversations. So I get it. I don't agree with it, but I understand where they may be why they may come out guns a-blazing right away necessarily sometimes, you know?
It's interesting because like being into the whole punk thing, being middle-aged and having green hair, you know, that alone, I mean, and as silly as it sounds, but that alone is ammunition for somebody to try to use against me on social media platforms and even in real life.
Right.
I'm moving back down to Florida back in, it's been about 4 years now, 17. And especially the area of Florida I'm in is very conservative, very, very military, very authoritarian. And I'm not
right at all.
So there's been a lot of resistance. And then when everything kind of popped off last year, and I definitely got vocal with things, and especially around here, there was a lot of resistance. I have had death threats. I've been told if I don't shut my lefty ass up, I'll never work around here again, blah, blah, blah. It's been difficult to get dialogue going. It's been difficult to have those conversations at all, because when you start having them, you get shut down.
Right.
And if you're not in line with everything, then you're against it. You know, which I kind of understand that mentality some, but being in the whole punk rock thing, having green hair invalidates my opinion on things, because I'm not a grown up anymore, or I'm not in the corporate. So I guess it's a weird, weird thing, because, you know, and I'll never understand what it's like to be a black man in America. I'll never understand what it's like to be an Asian person in America. I understand what it's like to have green hair and have somebody shit on me. I can change my hair. I can cut it all off and look just like them, you know, and all of a sudden the rules have changed for me. You know, when I moved down here, I was really kind of concerned because, you know, there's not a lot of media. There's not a lot of opportunities around here. But then I got into a market that I never thought I'd do, was weddings.
Right.
And it pays very well. And I'm taking care of my folks and stuff and helping them with their bills. But I mean, I don't have a mortgage. I don't have like rent. So I can splurge on myself a little bit. And I started upping my fashion game and my wardrobe and my shoes and my haircut and everything. And I look like a successful artist. So when I'm out there in front of these millions of dollar homes doing real estate videos, doing wedding videos, they see me as a successful artist. So that means they want to give me their money to make me have me do these great jobs for them, which I do. And we get along great. Our viewpoints completely opposite. And, you know, I know this, they don't know this until I take my hat off and they see my green hair. And now all of a sudden I'm somebody that they didn't know I was. So there's a game here. Right. And there's, you know, and it's a silly form of discrimination, or I wouldn't say discrimination, but I mean, it's a silly form of, I don't know, like you get this feel.
Like
they're looking at you differently suddenly.
And yeah, that's what I get every time I walk in and someone has my name as Jonathan Schaub, because it's very German. And my last name is mostly German. And like, and then I appear.
All of a sudden the rules have changed.
Oh my god, it's not funny, but it is funny in the sense of like seeing the shot.
It's palpable.
Dude, like it was even a bigger trip, because like they said my name properly and they're just like, "You're Jonathan Schaub." I was like, "Yeah, that's me." And it's just like, so I get that of that shift of it, right? Like I'm just like, "Yeah, it's so it's
you can
crazy."
See it in their eyes. It's just like instant. So it's become a game to me. It really has. And then when everything went off, especially around here, there was a whole lot of the All Lives Matter pushback.
Yeah, and let's get into that, because like I think you, like you said, you have been more vocal in an area of the country that may not want to hear what you're vocal about. Let's say. How has, and you talked about, you mentioned like the death threats, the conversations you've had, what makes, cause I always talk to this about, Randy, and like why I can't wait to get him back as a host on here, is like that perspective is fascinating to me, that a white man, white anyone, white woman, man, whatever, just continues to do that. Because I think, like, for people of color, as sad as it is to say, like, we are sometimes wired to understand, like, oh, it's just going to happen, so it's just better to deal with it. And I don't know if, like, growing up in as a white person, that maybe not register, but, like, to when it does click and to when you do see the cards that someone is holding, to continue to be like, no, fuck you, that's wrong, versus giving into, like, maybe the mainstream of, like, what a white narrative may be, right? Like, I think that's how does that toll feel? And, like, how does that experience go? Because it's got to be, because, like, I think I was talking to Randy, or maybe it was someone who is white. I sense all this stuff has emerged to the surface of social justice, the pandemic, all this stuff. I haven't received too much pushback from family, from friends, because of maybe the characteristics that I am of someone of color. Like, maybe they think at some point he was going to start doing this. But as a white person, I know a lot of white people that have lost friends over this shit and have lost family mm-hmm. members, and that there's a divide within their family of what human rights is human rights and what does this look like. So how has that been since the last couple of years?
I've definitely lost friends. I've pissed off family. And, you know, that's something that's made me realize that just because somebody's related to me doesn't necessarily make them family to me.
Is that loss hard, though? Is it?
No. If it was, you know, there are certain things that I will not budge on.
Mm.
I've held these convictions a very long time. You know, I grew up poor. Growing up poor, I mean, like, we lived in a goat shack, kind of poor, you know, that doesn't know color.
Right.
You know, you grow up poor, you're shit, you know, from other people, even from other poor people that are just a little less poor than you, you know, and then going from that into the punk rock culture and seeing the equality there, that's something we all fought for. You know, and that's one thing that's pissing me off about the punk rock culture, but I'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, we fought for equality and we're still fighting for equality. And I've been fighting, I've been in protests. I've been, you know, in food drives. You know, social media makes it a little different, especially in an area that is so ultra conservative. And having the views that I do, I mean, why are we even having debates and discussions on human rights and excluding people from that? Like, that just, how can, if you're talking about human rights and excluding other people, you don't have human rights. You have class rights. And the sooner people realize that, you know, I don't know. But now, you know, 2021 is here and very strange. And now you have, you know, people in the punk rock community pushing back against, you know, things like vaccines and masks because, you know, it's being pushed down from authority figures. Okay, on one hand, I am very against authority, always have been, have a really difficult time with it. But at the same time, I also understand I have obligations to, you know, and especially, you know, in the punk thing, you know, fuck society and all that.
Right.
But still being a part of a society. There's a balance there. You have to make some concessions. There's going to be times where things are uncomfortable or things are unpleasant, especially in a time of change when everything your entire life has benefited you because of the color of your skin. And now all of a sudden there's a little bit of a shift. It's like, hey, let's let more people have some of this pie. Even though the pie is infinite and it's not going to be less pie for me, it's just going to be other people enjoying pie as well. There's a lot of pushback. How can they enjoy pie that I'm having? That might mean one day there'll be less pie for my grandchildren. You know, I'm guessing. But then being in the South, being in the old South,
yeah,
where there's still a lot of the old Southern ways and old Southern money, and a lot of those old Southern ways with old Southern money don't want to let either of them go. They still long for a day where they don't necessarily have to pay their workers anymore. And it's not talked about. It's, you know, it's kind of an understood thing that the Southern Antebellum whole thing is still part here, you know, and they're still mad about it. They want the workers back.
What people don't realize that never, because I know a lot of people, especially now being back in the Midwest, that never traveled down south, like into those specific areas of the more poor, like super backcountry style places. Like, it's like a time machine, bro. Like, you can go into certain parts of the country in the south and understand, like, oh shit. Like, not only is that mindset of what happened is true, like you were saying, but like, there's an aura about it, just like, oh, okay. And I don't know if that's just stereotypes being stereotypes, but it is like something that I felt anytime I go down there is like, okay. And Randall, even just in Florida, and that's not even necessarily where I consider part of that narrative sometimes, but there is always a heightened sense of when I go down there, just like, okay. There's a different rules, right? Like there's a different comfortable zone down there for me.
See, I'm not in like the Miami or Orlando, Florida.
Right.
I'm not in that Florida. I'm in the Northwest Florida.
Yeah.
I'm still in the deep South Florida.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's different here. It's very different here. The town I live in particular, now back in the 80s and 90s, it was much different. Back in the 80s and 90s, all the black folk lived on one side of town and all the white folk lived on the other side of town. Mm. And there's been a lot of expansion and growth since then. And the military base is right here and it's grown as well. So now there's a little less of that.
Mm.
But like the neighborhood I live in is still one of those old neighborhoods.
Mm.
You know, so I mean, my neighbors on both sides, they look just like me.
Just all white. Yeah, know, just majority right white. The street,
they look just like me.
Mm.
I go up to the gas station that's like two blocks away. Everything behind the gas station is older houses, older multi-apartment, little kind of one-story multi-apartments, lower-income housing, a lot of lower-income housing. They don't look as close to me over there.
Isn't that crazy how that works in zoning laws?
There's a street that divides us. That's all that... But I mean, that's the way it was in Chicago back in the day.
Well, and that's the way it is. Like talking to Champ, right? Like that's the way he understood life too. Is like there is the segregated areas of like where it's an all white community or an all black community, and there's not a whole lot of diverse mixing into that genre. Where at least the neighborhoods that he's aware of down in Milwaukee, right?
Like, you know, but when I lived in New Orleans a few years ago, you know, I lived in the 7th Ward of New Orleans, and back in the day, I was, you know, it was similar to that. But now, you know, granted, there's been a lot of gentrification. I don't think we were a part of that gentrification because we were a bunch of poor punk rock kids that took over a squat house.
Right.
You know,
that's about to get demolished anyways.
Yeah. And but what we did was we set up a bike shop in the basement. We would help out the community and work with the community to help out the kids with flat tires. We patched their bikes up. You know, if somebody had a problem with their crankshaft, they come bring it over to us. We'd figure it out. You know, we'd fix their bikes and stuff. So we kind of became accepted by the community. You know, we were different. You know, we didn't fit the bill,
right?
You know, so they, you know, we had a lot more. We had a lot easier of a time integrating into their community than asking them to integrate into our community. You know what I mean?
No, I've always been told, like, in successful adventures or endeavors, the ones that can do it are like the chameleons, right? That can kind of blend in enough not to go away from who you truly are, what your morals or beliefs are, or where you stand on certain things. But the idea of like, well, if I need to help the community, the quickest way to do that is to blend in a little bit more. Not you to know, give maybe, in to society, but to chameleon fake my way through it so I can get what I need from that pie, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean, like in a place like New Orleans, you know, you don't want to move into New Orleans and buy a house next to a bar and then make noise complaints against that bar.
Right. Right.
If you're moving next to a bar, the noise that comes with it is to be expected. And that's part of that block. It's part of that community. It's part of that corner, whatever.
Right. Right.
So we weren't going in there and trying to demand changes or making noise complaints or anything. We're like, hey, turn that up. That has a beat, you know. We all cook out together, you know. So I mean, I don't think that we got a lot of that gentrification as far as, you know, oh, here come the crazy whites taking over the neighborhood. It's like here comes some people moving in next to our people. Let's see what's up with these people. Mm. And we all got down together. And I don't think something like that. I'm hoping there's more of that. I'm hoping that there's more of, you know, like, hey, these people don't look like us. Let's go say hi.
Mm. You know, I don't know, man. Like that's a big task, especially down there. Shit. Yeah.
Down here it really is. But I mean, it's weird. Like I went to Milwaukee. I think you were with us with Champ doing that documentary for that vodka company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
that was that project after we won the 48 was like that yeah. was like the
and
next
we went
round.
To that old we went to that old house with one of Champ's homies sitting out there.
Yeah.
And I get out the car with my hat all kicked, you know, and walk right up and shook the dude's hand, gave him some love. And I think it might have been maybe it was Ben. Sorry, Ben, to out you like this, but he was kind of like, yo, in the backs of the car, like, yo. what hood are we even in? And Champ's like, look at Dave. He just gets out, hat all kicked out sideways and stuff, goes up and shows the man some love. I mean, it's yeah. that kind of thing. Like the whole punk rock thing gave me the audacity to do that, but also made me know I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable in the hood. I'm comfortable in poor communities. I'm comfortable around people of color. I'm comfortable around, you know, trans people. I'm comfortable around gay people. I'm comfortable around people. I'm a people person, you know, so I'm going to see the man of the house. I'm going to go up and I'm going to shake his hand. If I'm in his culture, I'm going to present myself like I'm aware of his culture.
Right.
You know,
I see that's the difference, right? That's a great statement of difference of just like understanding that you're aware of his culture, but not taking his culture. Right. Like I think I remember certain situations when I would introduce people from different populations or communities, right? And there was this idea that certain people had to try and feel like they needed to dap them up perfectly or that they needed to do a certain thing when they're in there. It's like, well, bro, that's not it. You have to be you.
You have to be you.
But to be in their community and respect it, right? And to understand that there are different rules that are along with every community, because I think, you know, especially when I introduce like certain white friends of mine to people of color, like there is that initial hesitancy, let it be just because you didn't grow up around that community or have never really talked to anyone from that community. But it is that idea of just like, you don't need to be anything different than who you are, but to understand if we're in your world or if we're in their world, that it is different worlds, it's different perspectives, it's different life to where that happens. And when you do that, and why I am able to do that with people of color quicker is because like there's just this, and if you talk to really anyone of color, they may attribute the same thing. It's just like that understanding of like life of just like, you probably have gone through some shit and I know that. And I respect that common ground that we may share. And even if it's not true, it's just the idea that we're not the majority population. So we understand that there's shit that comes with that. Right. And so to what you're talking about too, is like, yeah, there are certain situations where like, you just need to respect who that person is, what they have grown about, what their lifestyle is and all that stuff is like, and that's what gives you confidence to go into different atmospheres and why it doesn't have to be scary. You just have to be who you are. Right. Like you just have to, and not put on a fakeness of it. Right.
And you know, like you said earlier, even me meeting new white people down here is weird for me. Because
it's a different breed down there, bro. That's why.
I don't know. Yeah. Like my neighbor on one side, you know, at first meeting him, I thought he was cool. You know, we chop it up. I smoke weed with him. And then I find out that he's a complete devout Q person. Like, he's way into that rabbit hole. And I mean, I don't think I'm going to learn a whole lot there. I don't think I'm going to change a mind or have a mind change there. And he followed me on Facebook, and then he saw my views. And now, you know, and it got to the point to where the only time we would interact with each other would be to argue. And that, you know, and that's a wasted energy.
Yeah.
That's a wasted time. That's something that was intentionally created to keep users engaged on a platform and exposed to more advertising for longer.
Yeah.
And I can't play that game. You know, I mean, we understand media. We understand social media, the way it works, the reason it works, who's benefiting from it. A lot of people don't. And they,
is that shit crazy? Yeah. Sorry. That's just crazy to me that people don't know how it works though.
Yeah. Well, then they think they know how it works, but they don't know why it works. They don't know why it exists or what they're really being targeted for, you know, and seeing that, I mean, you can see the disconnect. You can see the people that think they're just having a debate or an argument or trying to prove themselves right. They're never trying to prove you wrong. They're trying to prove themselves right. They're not trying to change your mind. They're trying to assert theirs. But they're also oblivious to the fact that all they're doing is just exposing themselves and others to more advertising and more tracking data. And like, why?
But I think you put on something, a good point though, too, is like, there are people both left, right, Q on theory, or just pro, just huge anti-Trump people that, like, you're not gonna, there's no time to try and help that person along because they may be going through something that, because of why they're so stuck on something. And so it is best, not best, but there is an alternative solution to go try and talk to someone that may be into Q, right? But maybe is a little bit more open to suggestion of just different perspective, right? Because I, like, there's a lot of fucking anti-Trump people that, like, quite honestly, like, I'm sick of and annoyed of. And this is someone that is relatively all the way anti-Trump. There are certain things I did find fascinating about his time, right, that I think also benefited America, to put on record. But, like, I think there are so many fucking, like, well, this is where racism starts. It's like, well, no, motherfuckers. Like, this, like, you're giving him way too much fucking credit.
Yeah.
But they're so tied to just anti-Trump shit that they can't get off. And that's, again, someone I agree most opinions on because of maybe where we align on certain aisles and topics. But, like, I get what you mean. Again, like, if someone's so far fucking gone in something, it's hard to have the energy to bring up because it does usually end up in argument versus conversation. That goes
back to the whole identity part too, is because a lot of people now have attributed their identities to their political leanings. And if, you know, when I was coming up, there was three things we didn't discuss at a bar: politics, religion, and sports.
Right.
And I grew up with that mentality. Those are the things you don't talk about at a bar. If you look at social media, like, it's a bar, and all of them are drunk, and all of them are angry. Especially with the people that have attributed their entire beliefs and identities to their political leaning. it's a pointless conversation. It's a time wasting conversation. No minds will be changed. No things will be learned.
Yeah. There needs to be equal amount of openness and conversation and dialogue on both parties.
Yeah. And acceptance and delivery. You know, I mean, if you're going to have conversation, it has to flow both ways. You have to be open to absorbing that information or that perspective, as well as, you know, issuing your own. Right now, it's not like that. With certain demographics of people on both sides of the aisle. I do understand why. I don't think it's a good thing for anybody. This is the second time in my life I voted.
When was the first?
Scott Walker.
That's crazy.
I voted. I have never truly believed in it. I'm not sure. Recent events have helped or hindered that. But I did feel that I had to do what I had to do to do what I thought was going to be best for the country and not for self. And that's, you know, I think that comes with age as well. I think that, you know, that's one of those things that comes with wisdom or with time or with experience, is learning to do less for self and more for, and not even necessarily others, but the benefit of all.
Well, you make a good point, though, right? Because so many people go into voting to think about, like, how that's going to affect them. Right. Yes. Like, okay, how does voting for not having new roads affect me? Okay, that means I can't get to car. I have to go an alternative way because I don't like the potholes in this thing. If I vote for this person, how does that change the narrative of white power, white supremacy versus what liberation may look like? Right. But I think there needs to be that conversation of, and what I was telling, like, during the couple elections there, to white people that just, like, didn't want to vote because they share same narratives of not believing it or this, that, or the other. I was like, but your vote towards helping out someone of color means a lot. Not only if you win or lose, blah, 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 but the idea that you put pen to paper that this may be a better situation. And we can argue politics until people are blue in the head, right? Yeah. About, like, is Joe Biden doing this or that better or worse, yada yada. I honestly don't like where he's at right now, and that's even after voting for the situation, because I'm frustrated with how he is handling the people of color after his campaigns and shit he did and quite honestly promised to the Black community and Asian community specifically. But I think there's this weird thing that you just, like, people just think about it in that sense. And it's like, but you could help shift narratives for your neighbor, for your friend that may experience racism on a time. And again, this is just how I relate to it, because that's usually where my focus is, mm-hmm. is on the mental health and capacity and social justice. But, like, for you, it may be how that affects X, Y, and Z. Right. But it's a good point to just understand that, that way of it, like thinking of it more all than just I.
I definitely have been trying to grow and learn and, you know, think more community minded. I went through a 20-year long depression where I lost sense of a lot of things. But after coming out of that and then moving back down here, I came down, you know, I wanted to learn how to be a better me, how to be a better son, how to be a better friend, how to be a better person in my community. When everything went down, after George Floyd got killed, and there was a lot of protests, there was protests down here. And I had to go. I couldn't go to all the other protests, you know, felt I needed to be at, even with or without my camera. You know, what I felt were my brothers and sisters are out there fighting for their lives, fighting for their friends' lives. And I felt an obligation to be there, but also during COVID, where I'm taking care of, you know, my mom and my current stepdad, and he has cancer, you know, taking care of them, I couldn't be out there. So when the protests here happened, and I live in a town of maybe 20,000 people now on the beach down here, and, you know, masked up, and I felt I had to be there, and I did, and listened to the people talk. There was maybe 50 to 100 people at the protest, but for this town, it felt big.
Right.
You know, and the emotion that was poured out there was just as big. And knowing some of the things that have happened in this town, race related, sexuality related, seeing people get injured and beat because of, you know, things that separate us. You know, it was really important that I was there. And there was, you know, there was even resistance. There was a little bit of resistance to it. There was some kids in a big truck with a big Trump flag driving around, basically and trying to intimidate, and they got ran off by the police. And I thought that was actually a pretty good thing.
our protests are massively different when it comes to the police, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah. But I mean, it surprised me, honestly, that they ran, you know, the big pickup truck away.
Mm.
But they, I think they knew what was potentially going to happen was it was going to turn into something a lot larger.
Can I ask you a question? Why did you feel that sense? Because I asked Randy this too when it happened, right? When we went to ours in Los Angeles, and I'm compelled to just understand your opinion on this too. What about George Floyd and that situation of the murder of him? And I'm sure you listened and saw the others and countless others that continue to be brought up. As a white man, what was it inside you that may have done that? Because for someone of color, it's super easy, right? Like, one, as an Asian community member, I'm trying to take my job very seriously as to heal the divide that was created between the Black and Asian community. I wanted to be there understanding that if there anything happens to the Asian community, that I would hope Black people would come and support as well, which I have seen now. So that, you know, like, those are certain things that someone of color can, but why, like, what is it within a white man's mindset to be like, fuck, even I need to make sure that I'm represented there as actually being there?
There's so many protests and so many people that have been killed by, you know, those sworn to protect. And I mean, so many of my friends and people that I genuinely, truly care about, it could have been them. It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been, I mean, it was all of us. George Floyd was all of us. You're right with all of us. You know, Philando Castile was all of us. I mean, it could have been any of us. It could have been any one of my friends throughout any part of my life that looked a little different. It could have been, I mean, you know, I don't know if it was because it was just, if it was because it was another police killing. Because, I mean, like I said, I'll never understand what it's like to be a Black man.
Right.
I won't. And there's times where, you know, as I guess, quote, an ally, I need to know when to shut the hell up and let the Black man speak and take a step back.
Yeah, I remember when you reached out to me after the Atlanta shootings with the Asian parlors down in Atlanta, and you made that very obvious to me that, like, yo, if you just need a vent about this shit, like, and not me and not a debate, not even a conversation, like, just text me and blow my phone up type of shit, like, do it. And like, just the idea too, like, you, I remember, like, your, one of your first, like, sentences in our exchange was just like, man, that shit could have been you. And I think you were one of the very few people, like, I had a lot of people reach out and I'm appreciative of that, but some of it felt just because, like, they know I'm Asian. So, like, they probably thought I was connected or had strong feelings about it. So that's why they did it. More is like that they felt obligated to, versus like the understanding of, like,